3 o'clock hour, Sports Radio 610. Astros hosting the Angels for the series finale, four game set today at Daikin. Have just taken a 5-3 lead over the Angels. Still batting in the bottom of the sixth inning. They've got two on, runners at second and third with two outs. Who do we think for that latest rib? Oh, it's one Jeremy Aloysius Pena. Just blasting a ball to left field to score yet another Astro run. Very important one.
Yeah, Cam Smith coming in.
Cam Smith got on, stole Astros second base. Mauricio Dubon worked a walk. And then Jeremy Pena coming up with a big hit to give the Astros a little bit more separation. Now you got bases loaded, PC. Bases loaded, two outs, and Jose Altuve up at the dish.
Yeah, boy, they decided to intentionally walk Yordan Alvarez.
Go figure.
Yordan getting the Barry Bonds treatment again.
Like, right out of the gate. Does anybody want to tell the opposition, please don't, that Yordan Alvarez was hitting like 213 before he'd come back from injury? Like, this is a guy that never, ever got going this season for the Astros.
Hey, one for three this today with that walk, now hitting 222.
How many walks does he have since his return?
It's got to be at least six.
Six or seven, right? I don't know what he's done the last couple of days. I can't remember.
He's walked every game that he's played. He's walked every game.
Might be seven or eight walks by now for Yordan Alvarez, but you're 100% right. Like, especially in these situations, don't let him beat you. That's the mentality of the opposition. They don't want any part of him. I mean, if you're going to, like, you're the Rockies. You're the worst team in baseball. That guy, Tanner Gordon, that was the first pitcher that Yordan Alvarez faced out of the chute, right, when he returned. Didn't want any part of him. Like, if I'm a young fella and I'm going through, like, a really rough season, 7-11 ERA, and I'm going on the road to face a struggling Astros ball club, I'm going to see what I got against one of the most feared hitters in baseball when he's right. No. Didn't throw him a strike. And so he walked Yordan twice then. The next day.
It's actually eight walks now. Since
that's what I figured.
That's
his
eighth walk.
Next day, Rocky pitcher walks him twice. And it, same story in this series with the Angels. They don't want any part of Yordan Alvarez. And I just tip my cap to him and say, thank you, sir. Move along. You'll have to face Jose Altuve, a very dangerous hitter in his own right when he's on. And Altuve has been struggling a little bit here, but does have a hit and a rib already today. See if he can make the Angels pay a little bit more. We'll keep you up to date. If you are not familiar with what the hell we do on Area 45 that's in for the drive today, we'll have an H-Town postgame show for you coming up at the conclusion of the ballgame. Altuve with a ground out to third base. Stros will go into the seventh inning, leading 5-3. Right now, we're going to go retroactively back to NRG and let you hear from one D'Amico Aloysius Ryans. He likes to coach football. He likes to do it for your Houston Texans. And he answered a lot of questions earlier today because it is a game week in which the Texans will open their season in Los Angeles against the Rams on Sunday afternoon. Here is him talking about all of that fun stuff.
Do you guys have team captains yet?
We'll announce our team captains on Wednesday.
Do you expect CJ Gardner-Johnson to be on track?
Yeah, CJ is doing really well, progressing fine. We expect him to be ready for week one.
Coach, what do you expect from this Los Angeles Rams team, especially going up against such a smart head coach like Sean McVay?
Yeah, I have the utmost respect for Sean and what he's been able to accomplish in his time there in L.A. The team is always prepared, always ready to go, no matter what year it is, who's available for him. Like, he's had turnover, but he's continued to have success. He's a Super Bowl winning head coach, played in multiple NFC championship games. So we know they're going to be ready to go. One thing about Sean, his group, they're going to be very detailed. They're going to play hard. So it's going to be a four quarter battle. And we're excited to go against these guys. Went against him a lot, and it's always been a tough challenge. He does a really good job with the motions, timing things up properly, putting defenses in conflict by all the motions and the snap points. So he does a really great job, really smart coach, really prepared. So looking forward to the challenge.
You have some other really good edge rushers here in Will and Daniel, but they also have some pretty good edge rushers. What have you seen from Jared Verse on film?
Yeah, this game, I think ultimately it is right now, as I continue to go through it in my mind, I think it really – hinges upon both offensive lines blocking two really talented defensive lines. The Rams have one of the best young defensive lines in the NFL, Verse, Fisk, I mean, Turner, Young. It was a young group, and those guys play, they get after it. They play relentless. They're tough. They're going to be a really, really good group for our, to challenge our offensive line, and the same for their offensive line versus our defensive line. We have a really good group up front, one of the strengths of our team, and we have to, you know, it's going to be a challenge to see how that shapes up, but both offensive lines are going to have to play well, and whoever wins that battle, I think, will ultimately decide the game.
Against Coach McVay quite a bit, obviously, when you were in San Francisco. He was here for a joint practice. Now Nick is your OC. What do you do with all that information you don't normally would have against an NFC opponent?
Nothing. It's all fresh. It's all new. That's the cool part about game planning and prepping. Like, for me, you have past history, but for me, I don't harp on that too much, and I don't get too bogged down on that. That's really the focus on what our guys do well, allowing them to go play fast. You can get bogged down on all the extra stuff, the window dressing, but you just got to let guys go play fast, especially first game. There are a ton of wrinkles. Their guys haven't played in the preseason at all, so it'll be the first time we see their outfit out, and we'll see, you know, how they're utilizing guys, where they're going to use Davante Adams, you know, how does Puka, what is his role, so it's a lot of unknown, especially with these guys. So, you know, I don't go in trying to figure it all out. I let our guys, you know, do the talking. I let our guys just play ball, play fast, play relentless, and let's see, you know, who comes out on top.
D'Amico, can you talk about your level of excitement as you get ready to approach this season and year three for yourself?
No, I'm fired up for the season. Like, we work tirelessly all through the offseason, where the free agency, draft, training camp, we work tirelessly to get to this moment, right? And we're here. Like, you get 17 opportunities that you're guaranteed, so how are you going to take advantage of them? One at a time. Like, how does our team take advantage of the opportunity, and how does our team grow throughout the season? That's what I'm most excited about. Every year is different. Every team is different. I'm excited to see what the 2025 Texans, how we look, how we show up on Sundays. I mean, I'm fired up. There's no better time than football time, as everybody can feel that excitement in the air from watching college football over the weekend and now getting ready for the first NFL game this Thursday. Man, football is in the air, and we're excited it's back.
Thanks, D'Amico. Every year is new, but you also have some guys who've never done this before. What's your message for your rookies and the young guys who made a significant time on Sunday?
Yeah, Kim, the message is, it's really simple. Like, you played football before. Don't overthink it. Like, you play football since, I always say, guy, you played football since you were like 6 years old. So just because it's now your first time in the NFL, I tell our guys, somebody has to be rookie of the year. Somebody has to go out and play well as a rookie. Someone will. Why is it not you? So get rid of all the rookie jitters, all the most, like, go play ball, go do what you've been trained to do your entire life, and that's have fun playing football. You do that, block out all distractions, do what you've been taught to do, you'll go out and play well.
What do you remember about when you first were a coordinator, when you went from position coach to a coordinator, and how can you help Nick Caley calling his best?
Caley is ready to go. Caley has been through a ton of situations all through training camp, all through OTAs. We've been through a lot of different situations. All right, he's called a ton of plays throughout the offseason, throughout training camp, in the preseason games. He has reps on task, so he's ready to go.
Has CJ being able to call Texans at the line of scrimmage maybe changed things for the offense, or maybe made them, particularly CJ, too?
We'll have some different variations to our offense, whether that's the mechanics at the line of scrimmage, checking plays, changing protections, whatever that looks like, whatever it entails, like, we'll be ready to go. CJ's done a great job with the protection scheme of getting guys in the right place, adjusting when he needs to adjust. Just a matter of him being able to see it the right way, see it the same as the offensive line is seeing. And as long as we have 11 guys on the same page, like, ball snap, let's go play.
Obviously, you wanted to make changes on the offensive side of the ball in the offseason. You did so. What did you see in the preseason now that it's behind us that says you like what you see and it's progressing to give you confidence?
What I've liked about our offense is, and I really like just how detailed our guys are. Our guys are they're on it when it comes from a schematic standpoint. There are not a ton of missed assignments. Guys are playing fast. Guys are playing together. And that's the main thing that I want to see, guys playing together. No hesitation, playing fast. Our brand of football is play fast, play relentless, and swarm. And that's what I want to see from the offensive side of the ball. We've seen that from the defensive side, special teams. Now the offense just plays that play that way, and think Kaylee gives us the best. He's given us the best chance to play that way.
From the Rams.
In Greenbrier, I will say that the one thing that he loves about you being his head coach is that you're constantly challenging not only him but the rest of the team. What is the challenge headed into 2025 for the team?
The challenge for us is, it's to be as best as you can possibly be. It's each individual. Like, how are you showing up on game day? Are you locked in on your assignments? Are you dominating your one-on-one? Are you dominating that daily process outside of the building when we're not doing ball? Are you taking care of all the little things the right way? And we'll see how that collectively comes together on game day. But I just challenge everybody to continue to grow, continue to get better, and continue to, you know, push yourself, strain mentally and physically to be your best. I feel like this is such a privilege, it's such a blessing to get the opportunity to play in the NFL. It's a dream for so many guys. So when you are here, you're in the building, you're on a team, how are you taking advantage of that dream? I think about all the guys who I played with in middle school, high school, who didn't get the opportunity to be where we are. So how would those guys, how would they respond if they were in your shoes? They would die for this opportunity to play in the NFL. Right? So we're here. How do we take advantage of it? How do we maximize it? And how do we just represent for the city of Houston, right, to make our fans proud of what we're doing?
From a blocking standpoint with the Rams personnel, especially Jared Burris and Braden Fisk, what are some of the challenges of their defense with those guys in mind?
Yeah, their defense is, it starts up front with their defense line. Those guys play relentless. I scouted all those guys, really like the mindset that they bring to the football, to the football field. They're all relentless, and they're going to bring it every snap. There's no let up with their defensive line. They play tough. They play physical. So we're gonna have our work cut out for us up front, but we're ready for that challenge.
You mentioned the dream. Obviously, the dream for Damon was to make the 53, didn't make it, but to give him that phone call to make the practice squad is a big step for him. What was that phone call like, and just this moment, if he was able to kind of share the emotions of being in the league?
Yeah, Damon is very thankful for his opportunity, right, to be in the league and to get that taken away from you, right? I'm happy to be in a position to give a guy like Damon, right, who has had some mistakes in life, as we've all had mistakes in life. I'm just happy to be in a position to give someone like him another crack at it, right, to show that you can grow, you can improve, you can be better. We are all worthy of another chance, right, no matter where we are in life. And so Damon is taking advantage of that. He's here on the practice squad, has continued to work to improve, and he's fired up to be in the position he's in to hopefully somewhere along the season get out there and help us win a game.
That was Texans head coach D'Amico Ryans from earlier today at NRG, his first press conference of the week. Texans will obviously open the NFL season Sunday against the Rams at their place. 3:25 is the kickoff. Obviously, PC, the biggest news from the press conference today, D'Amico Ryans announcing that C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who suffered a really scary injury, at least that it appeared as though when the Texans were at the Greenbrier earlier in training camp, avoided an ACL tear or some sort of a L injury, and is expected to be ready for Sunday afternoon's opening kickoff against the Rams. That's huge news because, oh my God, what does this Texans defense look like when it can be fully intact? And C.J. Gardner-Johnson definitely gets the Texans the ability to do that if he's going to play on Sunday.
I feel like if Gardner-Johnson was in a position where he was going to miss multiple weeks, Jabril Preppers being out there may have been a little different look-see for the Texans. And the fact that they didn't give him a look-see tells you that. I think they're pretty confident. Mm-hmm. C.J. Gardner-Johnson's going to be ready to go week one. And look, it was really scary looking when it happened with C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And he was in a lot of pain. And he was obviously very frustrated and concerned that his season might be over. Mm-hmm. By the grace of God, it wasn't. And I hope that he is able to come out. I mean, he's kind of been off the field now for about a month.
Yeah, just about, I guess. Yeah.
So I hope that he's able to go out and play at the best of his ability and not have a fear of re-injury, and not that any shot to his leg at all is automatically going to, like, you know, pop his ligaments, or, you know, he's going to tear something. Like, I want him to be able to go out and play. Like, look, the dude's a badass on the field. Guy goes out and gets six picks. I mean, you got six picks playing for the Super Bowl champions last year, who basically moved on from him in a salary cap cutting move.
Mm-hmm.
You were able, because of your position, to get rid of an offensive lineman that wasn't working out for you, to take on a guy that they needed to move on from, not because of his play, but because of his dollars.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny how this whole thing worked out since you mentioned Kenyon Green.
Hey, right? He's back on the team.
So August 7th, C.J. Gardner-Johnson has this injury with the Texans in the Green Bar. I think it was like the next day, Kenyon Green has like, or maybe it was the same day, has like an injured wrist, and he has to be helped off the field, right? Okay, so it's not looking good going out of camp, you know, for the Texans. And then, boom, rosters are announced. Hey, C.J. Gardner-Johnson made the 53. Can't be all bad news, right? At least he's not on a PUP list or this, that, whatever kind of list it is that's going to hold him out for the first four games of the season. No, he's on the 53 man. So, good news, right? Not so good news for Kenyon Green, who got his ass cut out of Eagles camp.
But he got re-signed.
He got re-signed to the active roster.
Yeah,
to the active damn roster. He ain't no damn practice squad player. He's on the active roster for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Expect him to get zero snaps unless someone gets injured.
Right. But then you get really good news today from DeMeco Ryans. C.J. Gardner-Johnson expected to be ready for the Texans against their week one opponent, the L.A. Rams, on Sunday. 713-572-4610. 572-4610. If you'd like to be a part of the show, we are Area 45 in for the drive. We'll discuss more Texans next.
This game, I think ultimately it is right now, as I continue to go through it in my mind, I think it really hinges upon both offensive lines blocking two really talented defensive lines. The Rams have one of the best young defensive lines in the NFL, Verse, Fisk, I mean, Turner, Young. It was a young group, and those guys play, they get after it. They play relentless. They're tough. They're going to be a really, really good group to challenge our offensive line, and the same for their offensive line versus our defensive line. We have a really good group up front, one of the strengths of our team, and we have to, you know, it's going to be a challenge to see how that shapes up, but both offensive lines are going to have to play well, and whoever wins that battle, I think, will ultimately decide the game.
DeMeco Ryans from earlier this afternoon. You hear that, Cole Popovich? Pressure's on, big dog. Texans head offensive line coach looking at you, Arianti Ursary, rookie. Looking at you, Lakin Tomlinson, Jake Andrews, Ed Ingram, and Titus Howard. Pressure's on. You heard it from the man, DeMeco Ryans. Going to come down to whichever offensive line performs the best against two pretty good defensive fronts in the Texans and the Rams. Should be a fun one. On Sunday, hopefully not too much fun, like isn't competitive. Like to see a good old-fashioned week one ass-whooping the Texans put on the Rams. We'll see. How do we get there? We'll talk ourselves into the Texans beating the Rams by 17 points in some form or fashion, I would imagine, over the next 5-6 days for
the
some
Rams
shows.
The Rams are 2.5-point favorites.
They are.
And Matthew Stafford has taken, like, no snaps in the preseason?
Yeah.
Yeah, hammer Texans.
That's like a pick 'em. You know? If it's less than 3 points, it's a pick 'em.
That's a 7-point win.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. We need to get off on the right foot.
Historically, quarterbacks who do not, like, even practice the majority of camp come out look like ass.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we were talking about, like, the Joe Burrow slow start because he's always dealing with some kind of injury that prevents him from participating in camp. Forget playing the games. He didn't participate in camp.
I got to tell you.
And then he sucks for 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden he's Joe Burrow again.
If Matt Stafford didn't have a back situation, if he was 5, 6, 7 years younger, I still wouldn't worry too much about, like, teeth chattering, biting my nails, like, oh, my God, what's this Texans defense going to do against him and the Rams? Oh, no. No! Quite the opposite, I think. they're looking at the Texans defense thinking, man, holy crap, this is going to be a damn blood fest, man. We're going to have to really grind and get after it. You kidding me with this secondary, with this Texans defensive front? I don't know that you go into anybody's, you know, stadium, no matter what the opponent this year, if you're the Texans. Yeah, I know they got the Ravens and they got the Chiefs, blah, 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 whatever. Nobody's going into anybody's house and thinking like, oh boy, the Texans, they're just going to get mollywopped this weekend. Right now, knowing what you know, the confidence that you should have in this Texans defense, nah. I expect competitive games across the board all season long, unless, of course, I'm anticipating the Texans wiping the floor with somebody. I don't think you go into a Ravens or a Chiefs or a Rams or whoever the hell's house PC this season and doubt yourself because of this Texans defense. Offense, a lot of question marks.
I think that all the question marks on offense are strictly about, will the offensive line hold up? Like, that is the one and only thing anybody's... Will the offensive line hold up? I don't think anybody's worried about Nico Collins, Christian Kirk, Dalton Schultz. And I think people probably feel pretty good about Nick Chubb, Woody Marks, maybe even okay about Damian Pierce.
Health.
But...
That's the caveat there.
The offensive line, people are like, okay, we've seen them play for a series. We've seen them play for two series. What happens when they got to play the whole game against the ones, like, what are they then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long can they hold up? If they get into, like, the third or fourth series, are they suddenly going to have a breakdown? And is that then going to get exploited? People, because they haven't seen it. That's all it is. They just haven't seen it. And because sports media and fans are so reactionary, it's the first game that we're going to have. So everybody is going to have their insanely wild, like, overreaction hot takes on Monday because, oh my God, this happened. They're doomed. It's week one.
Yeah, it'll happen. But that's what makes it fun. The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting, and it goes exactly into what you're talking about, like the fear of the unknown with the Texans offensive line, the whole thing, is D'Amico Ryans was asked about C.J. Stroud, you know, what's it going to be like for him, you know, with the extra responsibility, the freedom to, you know, make changes and calls at the line of scrimmage this season? And D'Amico Ryans said, well, we're going to have different variations to our offense. Mechanics of the offense at the line of scrimmage will change. And anyone will say, like, how he likes how detailed his players are. But that first part, like, the mechanics of the offense at the line of scrimmage, like, they have different variations to it. It's going to change. I want to see how they use those different variations. I want to see what the tempo of this offense looks like relative to what we saw the last couple of years under a Bobby Slowick-led offensive system.
I feel like them giving CJ all the keys to the car, right? They are now letting him make the calls as opposed to the center or whomever. You're setting CJ free.
Mm-hmm.
You are unshackling him and allowing him to be the player that he really can be. But we get to, like, halfway through this season, CJ's going to be playing at just, like, this insane level, and people are like, holy crap. But now that he's finally able to take advantage of the things that he sees and adjust the play, adjust the coverage, whatever, to what he is seeing and how the other team, I mean, remember, this is his rookie year. You know, he and Tank had gone to Bobby and said, hey, look, in this situation, they're doing this. We should do this.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby was like, okay, fine, we'll do that. And they smashed on it.
Yeah.
They smashed on it. So from that moment, why Bobby decided, CJ, you're not allowed to ever see anything ever again. We're never going to talk about this. Does, you know, raise just a couple of questions. So I feel like this is the best thing that can happen to the Texans is they're letting their quarterback have full control over everything going on in the offense. And I think the best quarterbacks thrive in that situation. And I think CJ will thrive in that situation.
Yeah, it's the ones that want it, the ones that can absolutely handle it, and they've shown you already. And CJ has shown you already that he can handle that. And I always think it's kind of funny. You know, people talk, we do too, so much about, like, you know, the whole scramble drill. Like, when a play breaks down and you know, who's been Johnny on the spot for the Texans the last couple of years? It's been, you know, Nico Collins. It's
been
that
Isaiah
whole
Hutchinson.
Hutch kind of inserted himself into that conversation as well. Especially, what was that, the big 34, 43-yard catch that he had down the right sideline?
Against the Chargers in the playoffs.
Against the Chargers, yeah. That was huge. And there's more to just like the old playground, like, you know, quarterback's running for his life. He just throws it up and, you know, the number one dude's going to get there. He's there. It's more to it than just that. It is, to me, just a level of understanding on where your guy is supposed to be versus where you need him to be. Like, you're both on the same page. The Texans, you know, with Dell and Collins and Hutch, like those, they're big three receivers over the last few years. And I know Dell doesn't factor in this year, but I think Christian Kirk should. And he's on like nobody's radar nationally for some reason. I don't understand why.
Excellent value pick late in fantasy drafts, by the way.
Yeah, hammer that one for sure. But his veteran, you know, being a veteran and being around a lot of different quarterbacks and various systems and just playing football and being a guy that is relied upon. This is a guy who's caught 1,000-plus yards before. Should have done it 2 years in a row. He gives me that same confidence. And you know what? When stuff hits the fan, like, he's going to be one of those receivers that CJ can trust. And I think Dalton Schultz is right there with him too. How can you not when Dalton Schultz a couple of years ago was single-handedly responsible for saving the Texans' bacon and plucking that ball away from, who was it, the Titans' corner?
Titans' safety. Ripped the ball out of his hands.
Dalton Schultz has been a really consistent guy in terms of, like, overall production. Who he was in Dallas is who he's been, you know, here as a Texan. He never really got it rolling last year, but you know he's got the ability.
Dang it, Bobby.
And I think that it's a really good situation for the Texans. Question is, offensive line, what does it look like in terms of allowing Nick Caley to really run the dang offense as opposed to CJ making chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, every other down, you know,
remember,
which you had to do last year.
Last year, it was, what, me, you, and Adam Spillane sitting in the press box going, the Texans play calling is, you know, running into the middle, CJ magic on third down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was their whole play. Gain nothing, or like, lose yardage. Everything was, you know, run, run, CJ magic. And as the offensive line began to break down, it didn't take very many games into the season for that to happen. As the offensive line started to break down, well, there wasn't any CJ magic because there was no time for him to make anything.
Yeah, we needed like placards last year in the press box. I hold up the A, you hold up the S. Smo holds up the other S. What'd you see on this one, guys?
Ass!
713-572-4610. 572-4610. Coming up next, hot leads. The day's top stories. We'll have them for you next. It's Area 45.
These are the new leads.
Now, look, I need the leads.
These are the Glengarry leads.
Two lead cards for tonight, two lead cards for tomorrow.
Why give him the good leads?
He's got the leads.
He's got the leads.
He's got the good leads.
The whole thing is the leads.
They stole the Glengarry leads.
Let's talk about something important. Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
All right, time for hot leads. We'll get you caught up on the day's top stories. We'll start at Daikin Park. Astros Angels still doing battle in the finale of a four-game set. Stroh's leading 5-3, bottom eight, runner on second, two outs for one, Yordan Alvarez. We'll see how scary this Angel
pitcher.
So they're
going to walk him? They just had a meeting at the mound.
Yes. Remember, Burke, all you have to do is throw up four fingers, okay? Don't screw that up. I don't know if they're going to do that.
Yeah, throw him a strike, and he's going to be like, oh, my God, is that a strike?
Yeah, shocking all campaign by the Angels potentially forthcoming here.
Wasn't looking for that. There'd be a strike? The hell?
There you go. 98 totally right down the pipe.
Totally stunning. Yordan had no idea what the hell was going to happen there.
Shocking. Look, fellas, this guy hasn't seen a strike in a week. And the last time he did, he hit it for a home run. Okay? So we're going to get him with the 98 over the outside corner. We'll see how that works out for us. So far, so good. Astros have gotten a hell of a start today out of Luis Garcia in his 2025 debut for the Stros. Six innings, three hits, three runs, three earned, no walks, Six Ks PC. How's that for a guy that ain't pitched for 2.5 years?
Man, Luis Garcia battled his ass off. And yeah, for a guy whose velocity is way down, he got the job done today. Just kept hitters off balance. By the way, they threw Yordan a second strike. And let's just say Cam Smith has scored. It is 6-3.
Yep.
Because Yordan Alvarez banged a base hit.
You know what the Astros dugout's saying right now? You suck.
Bam.
You suck. You suck. You suck. How about that? Yordan Alvarez has a little bit of that clutch gene, I've heard.
It has been rumored in the past that he has the ability to turn games upside down.
Yeah, buddy. Let's see. What did that drive in two?
No, just one. There's only one guy on.
Okay. Jeremy Pena.
Cam Smith scoring from second base on the base hit by Yordan Alvarez. It is 6-3.
Let's go.
Yordan's day is done.
So, speaking of Cam Smith, today, 2-for-4, 2 runs scored now. He's got a stolen base.
He's got 2 stolen bases.
Two stolen bases. That's right. He just did it again, huh?
Jacob Melton is running for Yordan Alvarez.
Evidenced by that 14-inch tear in his baseball pants on the left butt cheek for Cam Smith. Yordan is Biggio dirty today.
He is filthy today. Yordan was playing left field today, so not a surprise that with the 6-3 lead, they will pinch run for Yordan, and they will bring Melton in to improve the defense. I would expect Dubon will move to left field. He was in the center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, statistically, Yordan Alvarez is a tad bit better of an offensive player when he does play left field. So
these are true. And Jacob Melton just stole second base, and the Astros have run wild on the bases today. You mentioned Cam Smith has 2 steals. Pena has a steal. Christian Walker has a steal, and now Jacob Melton has just stolen the Astros' 5th base of the day.
That's awesome. 5 rips. Let's go. Shout out to Caleb Ort, who came in and pitched a clean 7th inning. Did allow a hit, but struck out 2 on 13 pitches. Brian King, a clean 8th inning. Let's see if the Astros can get a little bit more insurance for Brian Abreu to pitch the 9th. They get a little bit more, and you might not see Brian Abreu in the 9th. I don't know. We'll keep you up to date. H-Town post-game show forthcoming at the conclusion. Hey, how about Justin Verlander turning back the clock yesterday? Shout out to that dude. It's been a really rough season for him. He earned his 3rd win of the year. I think he's 3-10 now. 5 innings, 3 hits, 4 walks, but 10 strikeouts, which forced Sarah Langs, the great statistician in Major League Baseball, to have all kinds of fun on Twitter yesterday. Saw this nugget from her. Verlander, 42 years of age, the oldest pitcher with 10 or more strikeouts in a game since Randy Johnson did it in 2008. Pause. Jose Altuve.
Altuve!
Continues to be a badass. Hit his 24th Dingaruski of the year.
That is a 2-run homer.
2-run shot. Astros up 8-3.
And I expect we might see Craig Kimbrell instead of Brian Abreu in the 9th.
Let's go, big dog.
Let's go!
Somebody's got to be warming with Kimbrell on the mound.
Both of them were warming up.
So. Keep the other guy warm, okay? Kimbrell, things can get out of hand, you know, in a hurry with that guy on the mound. But check this out, dude.
Astros doing what they do. Score late.
Justin Verlander yesterday threw 124 pitches in 5 innings. 124. You know the last time Justin Verlander threw 120-plus pitches in a baseball game? He was a Houston Astro, and he did this.
Ground ball to third. Toro is there. His throw in time. Justin Verlander. Another exclamation point in a Hall of Fame career.
That was 2019. Just so happens.
Didn't Abraham Toro hit the home run in the 8th inning to give them the lead?
I believe so. I don't think he did. You're wrong on that. Today is the anniversary of Justin Verlander's 3rd career no-hitter that he performed as a Houston Astro against the Toronto Blue Jays.
The White Walkers.
Did what he did yesterday against the Baltimore Hoes, but I thought that was pretty cool. We got good Texans news earlier today. We just played the D'Amico Ryans press conference for you that he had earlier this afternoon. In it, he announced that C.J. Gardner-Johnson is on track to be available for the season opener against the Rams on Sunday. Gardner-Johnson, with a knee injury, had practiced last month at the Greenbrier. Scary scene, but not scary news. In fact, you know, a change, some good news. Gardner Johnson did not tear the ACL or any L that we know of, and now is on track to play football for the Texans week one.
Thank you, baby Jesus.
Yes, sir. Other Texans news.
I'm so hoping to see C.J. Gardner Johnson after rumors of his demise were greatly exaggerated. Grab himself a pick week one.
Oh, let's go.
Take it to the house and then strut like hell.
Yeah, not just a pick, but a pick six. That'd be cool. Texans added a speedy former Texas Longhorn to their practice squad. 23-year-old Silas Bolden, undrafted rookie this year, cut by the Vikings after their training camp, was picked up by the Texans, signed to their practice squad. Bolden, did you know, is one of C.J. Stroud's best friends because they grew up in, I like saying this, Rancho Cucamonga, California together.
I did not know that. I thought maybe he was one of his best friends because he runs a sub 4.440.
That too. 4.38 at the UT Pro Day earlier this year.
But, that's mildly fast. That is not deceptively fast. It's just fast.
That's flat out fast. He's 5'8", 160, and the official time was 4.38.
He's a tank clone.
That's what I thought, bro.
He's a tank clone.
The two played basketball and youth football together. In Cali.
I guess so. He was the point guard. For
Get one of his dogs in here, man. Let's go. You know, something that probably is kicked into the carpet, but Nick Caserio actually said something in his word salad last week at the press conference in that they were talking about like roster construction, and he made it a point to say, and I'm paraphrasing, but dude, just because you're on the practice squad doesn't mean you're not going to be helping the football team at some point in time. Outside of just injury this season. Like, they feel like they have some dudes on the practice squad that could help them win games. Maybe Silas Bolden is one of them, who, by the way, is a really good return man, punt returner.
He's your insurance if something happens to Berrios.
Yeah. And look, you need it. You need good insurance. You don't just need a regular guy. You need dudes, and he's a dude.
By the way, Craig Kimbrell in for the ninth inning. But much like what you were talking about, the Texans and the practice squad, right?
Yeah.
Some teams use the practice squad as like a redshirt year. Mm-hmm. Here, we're just going to stash you on the practice squad. You're going to learn our system. You're going to get ready. And this way, next year, you're going to make the team type of thing. The Texans don't use the practice squad like that. The Texans really use it like an extension of the roster. And they will bring guys up off the practice squad seemingly every week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, we need, you know, what do we want to attack against our opponent this week? Do I need an extra tight end? Elevated. Do I need an extra DB? Elevated. Are we going to bring a lot of pressure? All right, extra defensive tackle. Elevated, right? So they really use the practice squad. And I mean, Nick's not lying. They use it like an extension of the roster. And being on the Texans practice squad is not a redshirt year.
Yeah.
And you better be ready to go.
He's really talked about, you know, the team of, you know, whatever it is, like 72 guys or whatever they have, like instead of just, it's not the 53, it's not the 46 or 48 active on day.
For them, it's the 70 because they have the international player.
Yeah.
But usually it's the 69.
Yeah, the 69, very good.
You get 16 practice squatters and 53 guys on the roster. Usually it's the 69.
Just real quick, because we haven't talked about it. We haven't had time. There's just so much other stuff, man.
Look at the Stro poll. Which former ace in your Astros prime would you choose to go down the stretch? And people did not choose Justin Verlander, who, like, literally was unhittable down the stretch when they got him in 2017.
Nolan Ryan's not a bad choice.
Yeah, but as great as Nolan Ryan is, nobody ever in their Astros career, nobody was terrified of facing him the way they were terrified of facing Verlander, or in 86, the way the Mets were terrified of facing Mike Scott.
Yeah.
The whole league was terrified.
Can I tell you
of
something?
Mike Scott.
I don't know that I would have chosen either one of them because neither one of them, as Astros, got a great deal of run support. And Verlander this year for the Giants, not a great deal of run support.
Oh, he gets
the
negative run support.
They scored 13 runs for his ass yesterday.
About time. That might be more than they've scored from in a month.
Like Nolan Ryan like had a losing record with a 2.89 ERA one time as an Astro, I think. It was stupid.
And that's true. I mean, look, sometimes he played on some Astros teams that weren't that great.
No. You talk about squandering a guy.
I mean, I'll tell you what. If the Astros could somehow go back in time and pluck guys out, can we pluck Cesar Cedeno out? Because that dude was a baller.
Yeah.
People don't realize how great a player Cedeno was.
Yeah, you know, baller. And, you know, being is that the Astros kind of need some outfielders from time to time. It was an answer to a Stroh's poll question over the weekend. I think it was last weekend. Maybe it was Friday. Eric Anthony. How would you like to have Eric Anthony? They were like, the guy, one of the hints was star on the seat in the dome. And I always knew Eric Anthony. That thing was like a 442-foot home run he hit back in the day.
I mean, Cesar Cedeno, for his entire 17-year career, had a 790 OPS while playing in the dome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what does that translate to? Like, take that and insert Daikin, into Fenway.
Just add another, like, make that an 890.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest hitters of all time territory.
I mean, Cesar Cedeno hitting 40 doubles, stealing, you know, 55, 60 bases.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and he still hit like 20 home runs, which at Daikin would probably be 30 because, well, very much easier for right-handed hitter to hit home run at Daikin Park than the Dome.
Yeah, go figure.
Where balls went to die.
Coming up next, we'll roll into the 4 o'clock hour, and unless Craig Kimbrell decides to make things very interesting here, we'll have an H-Town postgame show. Stay there.